Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It's May 2nd, and I would like to open a public hearing on 3404A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you is House Bill 3404A. It is brought to you by Representative Malmstrom. The measure requires children under the age 2 to be properly secured with a child safety system in a rear-facing seat. There are no amendments. We have a revenue impact statement, which is no revenue impact. They're on OLIS, and the bill passed out of the House with 48 yes votes and no nay votes.
Wonderful. Representative Malmstrom, so happy to see you in front of this committee.
Oh, thank you. All right, Chairman Sanderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Malmstrom. I represent Southwest Portland and Beaverton in House District 27, and I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 3404. This bill was unanimously approved by the House Committee on Early Childhood and Family Supports with a due pass recommendation. It passed the House floor with bipartisan support and would bring Oregon law into line with the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which in 2011, that's 6 years ago, recommended that children remain in a rear-facing car seat until they reach the age of 2 years old. This is critical as the Injury Prevention Journal in 2007 found that children under the age of 2 are 75% less likely to die or be seriously injured if they are rear-facing in their car seat. That's 75% less likely. This, if passed, will amend ORS 811.210 to create an offense, Class D traffic violation, a failure to properly use seat belts if the parent, guardian, or person with legal responsibility for the safety and welfare of a child operates a motor vehicle on highways without using a rear-facing car seat for a child under 2 years of age. That said, the intent of this legislation is educational, not punitive. The Oregon Chief of Police and Sheriffs have committed to an educational period to make sure that parents are aware of this change in statute. In addition, the bill was amended in the House to exempt children who are between 1 and 2 years of age when the bill becomes law at the request of members of the Early Childhood and Family Supports Committee. Chair Monis Anderson and member of the committee, I ask you to support HB 3404 to help limit avoidable catastrophic injuries to Oregon's children. Thank you for your time, and I'd be glad to answer questions.
Let's do the panel.
Okay.
Dr. Hoffman.
Yes. Chairwoman Monis Anderson, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here again. For the record, my name is Benjamin Hoffman. I'm a pediatrician at OHSU, and I'm the medical director of the Tom Sargent Safety Center at Dornbecker Children's Hospital. I'm a certified child passenger safety technician and have been for almost 20 years, and I'm the only practicing physician in the country to be certified as an instructor for child passenger safety technicians. In that role, I've personally worked with over 10,000 families in parking lots, often on weekends, to help them use their car safety seats correctly. I'm also the incoming chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics Council on Injury, Violence, and Poison Prevention Executive Committee, the committee that wrote the policy that Representative Malmstrom referred to, and I was a co-author on that policy statement. As Representative Malmstrom suggested, car crashes are a big deal for kids. They remain the leading cause of death for children over the age of 1. In the United States, every day, 5 children die in car crashes, and approximately 350 are injured severely enough that they require medical attention. We know that car safety seats are incredibly effective. They will decrease the risk of serious injury by at least half, and the risk of death by approximately that much for older kids. Currently, Oregon law, in line with many other states, requires rear-facing car seat use until the age of 1. As Representative Malmstrom mentioned, there was a study published in 2007 that showed how much safer children would be rear-facing beyond the age of 1. She referenced statistics that looked at all children from birth to age 2. If we just look at the kids between age 1 and 2 years of age, there was a 5.32-fold decreased risk of injury, which is 532%. It is massive. The policy statement that we wrote in 2011 with the American Academy of Pediatrics said all infants and toddlers should ride in a rear-facing car safety seat until they're 2 years of age or until they reach the highest weight or height allowed by the manufacturer of their car safety seat. If I may, I want to take a second just to explain why car crashes are so deadly. And it involves physics. I assure you there will be no math involved. I will take care of that for you. If we were to go to the third floor of the Capitol and take a 10-pound bowling ball, I hazard a guess I would not be able to find a member of the committee who'd be willing to catch the bowling ball drop from the third floor. You would be correct in refusing to do so, because by the time the bowling ball hits the ground or would hit your arms, it would represent 330 pounds of momentum. It would effectively rip your arms off. 10-pound baby in a 30-mile-per-hour crash. So I will point out, as a nurse, you would know that a 10-pound baby is a young infant. I've been in the newborn nursery recently. I have a medical student who's here with me today from OHSU who's in the newborn nursery now. There are 10-pound babies there today. A 30-mile-per-hour crash, as I was driving in this morning from Portland, went through a couple of school zones, and I went 20, and I was passed by a number of vehicles going 30 miles per hour. Not a high-speed crash, illegal in a school zone, but not a high-speed crash. That 10-pound baby in a 30-mile-per-hour crash would represent 450 pounds of momentum, which is 40% more than the bowling ball dropped from the third-floor window. Now, because of physics, we need to recognize that all of that force has to go somewhere. We can't just make it disappear. This is part of what Isaac Newton taught us with his laws of motion. The baby traveling 30 miles per hour is going to keep traveling 30 miles per hour until something stops it. When it stops, all of that 450 pounds of energy has to be dissipated in a way that's not going to cause injury to the baby. So it has to go somewhere. We can't make it disappear, but we need to do it in a way that will prevent injury to the baby. So if I may I use a demonstration? Thank you. Hopefully you'll be able to hear me without the microphone. So this is what we call a convertible car safety seat. It faces backwards and then can convert to forward facing for older children. The reason this is going to protect a child so much better, rear facing than forward facing, is that if we're headed in this direction, 30 miles per hour, and we get in a crash, the child is moving in the same direction as the vehicle. They're going to keep moving the same direction as the vehicle until something stops them. What's going to stop them is the car safety seat, specifically this part of the car safety seat. And all of the force is going to be spread literally from head to toe, the largest possible surface area you could spread the force. And that's part of what decreases the risk of injury. The other thing is that the head, neck, and spinal cord are specifically protected by the car safety seat. And in fact, these things are designed to bend and flex to further cushion and support the head, neck, and spinal cord, because that's by far the most vulnerable part of the child. In a forward-facing crash,
can you get behind your chair so that the cameras can get
you? You bet. Yeah. If the same child were facing forward, what happens in a crash is they head this direction. And the only thing that stops them are the straps here, as opposed to the entire backside of the child against the car safety seat. As you probably know, children are not little adults, and especially infants are just built very differently than older children and adults. Infants have very large heads compared to the rest of their body. They have very weak neck muscles. And those things don't get caught up for quite a while, really, until after the age of two, maybe even four, is a child going to be able to protect themselves adequately in a forward-facing crash. So the principle is spreading the force over the widest possible surface area. That is important for this reason. If you take a finger and put it on your cheek and push, you will find that hurts. All of the force is being concentrated in a very small area. If I take the open palm of my hand and put it on my cheek and push just as hard, it does not hurt. I would invite you to do the same, should you choose to. The reason it doesn't hurt with the open palm is that the force is being spread over a wide surface area. And that, again, is the benefit of the entire back of the child versus just the harness straps. So our hope is that we can bring Oregon in line with best practice recommendations. Right now, every car seat manufacturer says keep kids rear facing until at least age two, to the limit of the height and weight of the seat. But they also, many of them also state that the absolute minimum to turn around, the earliest that you could possibly turn around, is for a child who is 1 year and 20 pounds. Our law is in line with the absolute minimum. And the message that families receive can be very confusing. by bringing Oregon law in line with best practice recommendations, which are supported by really good evidence, we will not only help educate families to do better to protect their kids, we'll help make it less confusing so that they will be empowered to do the best thing to protect their kids. I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak before you today, and I would be delighted to answer any questions that members of the committee may have.
Question, Kevin.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Montes Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, and the Oregon State Police to speak in favor of House Bill 3404. I'm really glad to join Dr. Hoffman, Oregon Health Sciences University, the broader medical community, and Representative Malmstrom in supporting this bill. As Dr. Hoffman mentioned already, the research and the corresponding best practice is clear. You know, for children under the age of two, rear-facing car seats offer the best protection in the event of a crash. And when the crashes result in the serious injury to a child or the death of a child, it is incredibly tragic. What a lot of people don't also recognize is for our police officers and deputy sheriffs and our state troopers who are on scene in those situations, those incidents can create trauma for officers that last their entire career, and it often does. And so it's not a surprise, or shouldn't be a surprise, that law enforcement is at the table here with the medical community supporting this effort. Whatever increases the safety for children is something that law enforcement will fully embrace, and we're thankful that this bill is coming forward. I want you to know from a law enforcement perspective, this bill does create a one-year period that allows folks to come up to speed with this law. So a child that's a year old when this law becomes effective, until they're age two, they wouldn't technically fall under any kind of penalty provision. But I want to add, because I think it's important to add, that our officers are far more interested in education in this regard. We have agencies throughout the state who are regularly putting on clinics for adults so they can better understand the law and especially how to properly install these child safety seats. And so what you're most likely to see in the event that a parent is pulled over or an adult's pulled over is you'll see an officer helping them install their seat properly if it's not already installed. So we're fully supportive of the bill. We appreciate the work of Dr. Hoffman, Representative Malmstrom, and others to bring this bill forward, and we strongly support it.
Yes, just a comment, if I may. I have the privilege of being one of the chief sponsors of this bill as well, along with Representative Malmstrom, and I appreciate all the work that Dr. Hoffman, you've put into this. I would point out that 20-something years ago when my children were babies, it was almost impossible to find a car seat that you could keep rear-facing beyond about 25 pounds. Now, I was lucky. My kids were little. My oldest just hit 20 pounds around her first birthday, but my younger one was a little bigger than that, and she almost didn't make it even to a year. Mm-hmm. So the technology has changed, the recommendations have changed, and Oregon kids deserve this protection. So I hope that this committee will enthusiastically support this. It's a matter of common sense, and as Dr. Hoffman so beautifully demonstrated, physics, which are sort of immutable.
Great. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
James Barta.
You okay? Thank you, committee. Thank you, Chair Montes Anderson. My name is James Barta. I'm the legislative director for Children First for Oregon. And in my former life, I was a physics teacher and a physics major, so I greatly appreciated the demonstration. I hope you all did as well. And I don't have much more to add, but other than to say that it's good that Oregon's law meets and matches the medical recommendations. And so when the police, when the doctor, when anyone else is telling a parent to do the right thing, what the evidence shows, they can also say, and it's part of the law. And so I hope that you will join all the other supporters and pass this measure.
Questions? Thank you very much. No opposition to the bill, so I think we can schedule this for a work session. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3404A and open a public hearing on House Bill 2931.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you is House Bill 2931. The measure modifies requirements for registration of behavioral analysis interventionists in Oregon. There are no amendments, no fiscal or revenue impacts, and testimony is available on OLIS. The bill passed out of the House unanimously.
All right. So we have Whitney Smith.
And then Paul Terdahl, I have to call.
Yes, and Paul will be on the phone. So is Paul going to go first?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, we'll get him on the phone first.
Hello?
Hi, Paul. This is Lori Monis Anderson. And we have just opened a public hearing on House Bill 2931. And do you want Whitney, or do you want to go first?
I introduced this bill, which essentially fixes a typographical error in the Senate Bill 696 that was passed in 2015. This is about educational requirements for behavior analysis interventionists, who are paraprofessionals that provide applied behavior analysis therapy services under the supervision of a licensed behavior analyst or other licensed healthcare professional whose core practice includes ABA. They are registered by the Health Licensing Office, and they have, because of they're paraprofessionals, they're under careful supervision by licensed professionals. They have basic registration requirements such as a high school education and some basic 40 hours of training and some other kinds of things. We basically made a typo in the bill in that we specifically said that they must have a high school diploma or a GED. And we have run into some issues where, in some cases, we have had highly qualified individuals who had college degrees or, in some cases, even graduate degrees, but for one reason or another, didn't actually have a high school diploma. They had basically gone straight into college. In some other cases, we've actually had applicants who had college degrees, but their high school either no longer existed, or I think in one case it actually burned down and was unable to certify their diploma, and thus they were unable to register and provide services. So what this bill does is very simple. It simply says high school diploma or a degree from a secondary institution. That just should be very simple and straightforward. And if you have any questions about the bill, I'd be happy to answer that. Then Whitney, I think, can maybe talk to you just briefly about some of the problems that CAR has had with this and answer any questions you might have about EBA.
Why don't we have Whitney give a presentation and then we'll open it up for questions?
Okay, Chairman Moniz Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Winnie Smith. I am a behavior analyst in Oregon. I'm here on behalf of Center for Autism and Related Disorders. I am in support of this bill. We have had a couple of instances where, as Paul said, highly qualified interventionists have come into our clinic, and because they don't have access to their diploma or they don't have access to their high school transcripts, they've had to go and actually get a GED to show that they're qualified or to... I'm not sure that they're qualified, but to register as an interventionist in the state. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Are there questions? It's a pretty straightforward bill. There's no opposition to the bill? Okay. We can schedule this for a work session, too, and I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2931. Thanks, you, Paul and Whitney.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you is House Bill 2751, brought to you by Representative Barreto. The bill allows occupational therapists to participate in Oregon's primary...
Wait, I better open a public hearing on it. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2751. Take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill allows occupational therapists to participate in Oregon's primary care loan repayment program. The bill also extends the sunset of the existing provider loan repayment program to January 2020, declares emergency effective on passage. The bill passed out of the House unanimously.
Okay, and
we have to call Lorena.
Okay, we'll call Lorena and Nikki. Lorena Harkins is on the phone. Nikki Terziff and Katie Smith.
This is Lorena Hawkins.
Hi, Lorena. This is Lori Monis Anderson. We've just opened a public hearing on House Bill 2751, and who wants to go first?
I'll just start very briefly, Madam Chair. Nikki Terziff here on behalf of the Occupational Therapy Association of Oregon. We are very pleased to be before this committee today. The Occupational Therapy Association of Oregon, or OTAO, represents hundreds of occupational therapists across the state. The return on investment in occupational therapy, habilitative therapy, and rehabilitative therapy is an immense one, and we're pleased to have this opportunity to help outline that for the committee today.
Okay. Lorena, or do you want to go next?
Yes, I'll start, Nick. Chairman Lori Anderson, thank you, and the committee, thank you for letting me testify to you in support of House Bill 2751, which adds occupational therapists to the loan repayment program. In 2015, I was sitting in a restaurant in Joseph, Oregon, and I met a gentleman who had to rehab after a stroke 100 miles away from his family members because there was not an occupational therapist in the county. And at that point, I wrote to former Representative Bob Jensen and said, look, it costs us a lot to go to school. We can't afford to come into the county and be OTs, but there's a loan repayment program out there that can help us bring occupational therapy to rural areas. And from that became House Bill 2048. Now 2017, I am living and working in Walla Walla, Washington, at the same facility this gentleman rehabbed at 2 years ago. I could not go back to Allow County because my student loans were too high for me to practice in a rural area. But Allow County does have an occupational therapist now, Angela Mart. And the beauty of that is, I still see patients in Walla Walla, Washington, from Wallowa County. I saw one this winter. She was a hip replacement. The surgeon did it here in Walla Walla. I had her for 50 days, and she was ready to go home, middle of January. And the nice thing is because Angela has moved into the county, I was able to continue the patient's continuum of care. And I called Angela up. She does home health. I said, my patient's returning back to you. To prevent her from failing at home, I need you to go over bathing and dressing, and especially toileting at her home. And Angela worked with her, and to this date, the patient is now back out in the community. Second patient I had, he was a younger gentleman. He had to rehab over here after cardiac surgery. On day 21, he needed to leave our facility because he was an Oregon Medicaid patient, and I was able to return him back to Willow County, stronger, continue occupational therapy, cardiac rehab based on the swing bed program. These are just two examples of how the benefits of having occupational therapists in rural communities to increase patient care. But the obstacle to rural practice for occupational therapists, as a practitioner, the obstacle is my student loans prevent me from being able to practice in rural areas. On the other hand, for administrators and those who are trying to hire occupational therapists, it's the same problem. They can't offer a rate of pay that can help pay for student loans. But HB 2751 answers this need for both sides of the hiring table because it allows for both people to deal with the student loan issue, and it also is the best care for our patients and for those in the community. So I urge you to please vote yes on HB 2751.
Thank you
for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let's go with Katie.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Katie Smith. I'm an occupational therapy student.
Oh, wait, Representative Beretta. Because you have other places to go. Okay. So let's have Representative Beretta.
Thank you, Chair Moines Anderson and committee. Greg Beretta, House District 58. Actually, I just wanted to testify on this bill. It's a very simple bill. It just adds occupational therapists to participate in the primary care loan repayment program. And this was passed on to me by Representative Bob Jensen when he left and I got voted in, and he asked if I would carry this bill. And we introduced it in 2015, and I just don't think it made it through. And I probably didn't ask a chair to carry it because I didn't know how the process worked then. And so anyway, I appreciate it moving through the House. I think it moved through unanimously in committee, and appreciate you hearing the bill also. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Barreto. My name is Katie Smith, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am an occupational therapy student. I would like to begin by just outlining very briefly some of the most recent evidence that supports the clinical effectiveness and cost efficacy of occupational therapy services as specifically relevant to rural and underserved populations here in Oregon. There is an abundance of evidence supporting occupational therapy's role in supporting older adults staying at home independently, reducing their hospital admissions. The population in rural areas in Oregon is disproportionately older relative to urban areas, and this skill set in working with older adults could be very well used in underserved rural areas if occupational therapy were listed as a provider for this loan repayment bill. There is also a lot of emerging evidence about occupational therapy supporting clients to self-manage their chronic conditions. As I'm sure you know, many people in rural areas have multiple chronic conditions that they're working through, and occupational therapy can help them manage and coordinate those conditions independently so that, once again, we reduce those expensive hospital admissions. Along those same lines, a very recent study came out that's very exciting. Occupational therapy was found to be the only service in this study that reduced hospital readmissions. So that's post-discharge, the only service that reduced readmissions. And it's those hospital readmissions that really rack up the hospital cost. So by reducing the readmissions, reducing the admissions in the first place, by getting occupational therapy into preventative primary care settings to work with these rural underserved populations, not only could it be clinically highly effective for the specific needs of this population, but it could be a huge cost-saving endeavor as well. That's just a little bit of the evidence, and I would be more than happy to send you a complete annotated bibliography or the articles themselves. Now, I'm slated to graduate next year with a huge passion for working with rural underserved populations, like many people in my cohort. I'm also graduating next year with a very large amount of debt. And it's an unfortunate fact that rural practice settings pay a lot more than rural underserved practice settings. And I want to work in a rural area. I want to serve our underserved Oregonians. But I just can't pay back my student loans unless we have a program like this, that something that incentivizes new grads like me to work in the areas that we actually want to work in these rural underserved populations. This bill can really make that decision for a lot of the new grads that are coming out. Many of the other listed professionals that are already included in the loan repayment program have a myriad of loan repayment options, other programs to choose from, but occupational therapy really doesn't. We have a significant amount of debt, even more so than some of the other listed professionals. And if this bill goes through, this would be a singular draw for occupational therapy new graduates to bring our broad, diverse skill sets of addressing physical conditions, chronic conditions, mental health conditions, drug and opioid abuse and overuse, and bring those skills
into primary care settings for our most vulnerable Oregonians. It would certainly make all the difference to me. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Doug Barber.
Thank you.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, Doug Barber here today on behalf of the Rural Health Association. In reluctant opposition to this bill, we have no doubt that occupational therapists provide a valuable service to the patients they work with. We also know that the Oregon's Loan Repayment Program is the most oversubscribed incentive program that we have. This biennium, there were 150 applicants from rural providers for the loan repayment program. There was funding for 26 awards. That meant there were 124 physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, dentists who needed the funding in order to practice in a rural community and were not able to get it because we don't have the funding. If we had, so without additional funding, we do not suggest adding new providers to the loan repayment program. Thank you.
So which providers are eligible right now for the loan repayment? You said MDs, NPs, PAs, dentists.
It's physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, dentists, expanded practice, dental hygienists, and clinical, and then the behavioral health component is clinical psychologists, social workers, and marriage and family therapists.
Is there any way that we can get a list of who was awarded of the 23, or what?
26. I can get that. I do not have that list here today, but I can
email it to Oliver and he can get it.
Sure.
To us.
Be happy to do that.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Again, a comment. Mr. Barber's points are well taken, and this is a subject that you know I've worked on very closely for better part of a decade now, long before I came to the legislature. And I agree with all of his comments. I also agree with the value, in particular, I agree with the value of occupational therapists, but we just don't, at the moment, have the money to do as much as we want to do. Representative Nathanson has a bill, 3261, that's down in Ways and Means. I have a bill, 3085, that could eventually provide funding, and there's a mechanism for funding in there. But given the fact, and it's a funding with an assessment on insurance companies and CCOs and third-party administrators that would provide stable funding at a level that's somewhat increased from now, both for this and for establishing medical education, healthcare workforce training programs. But this is not a year we can pass that part of it because we need to partner with, and we have partnered with our colleagues at the insurance industry and the CCOs to help pay for Medicaid, which is my top priority this year. So there are bills in place and funding opportunities to do this, and when we do that, then I think expanding the program for occupational therapists or physical therapists may well make a lot of sense. But when we've got 150 qualified applicants applying already, I'm hard-pressed to expand it to more and thin the soup even further. It's hard. It's a hard decision because I absolutely value the work that occupational therapists do. I work closely with them, but can't quite see going there right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lorena, thank you very much. Or is that who's on the phone? Yeah. All right, bye-bye. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2751 and open a work session on House Bill 2675. Oliver?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you, is House Bill 2675, brought to you by Representatives Nose and Aiden. The bill received a public hearing last Thursday, so not too long ago. The bill has no amendments, no fiscal revenue impacts, and the bill passed out of the House with 57 yes votes. Essentially, the bill would require a CCO, Community Advisory Council, to develop and adopt a community health improvement plan that includes a strategy to integrate a set of comprehensive health services, including oral health.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2675 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2675 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byron?
Yes.
Senator Knoth?
Yes.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and it's my bill. I mean, I'm on the bill, unless someone else is on the bill.
I'd actually really love to, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
But if you don't
then
want
let's
to.
Let Senator Steiner Hayward carry the bill, then, and we'll close the work session.
Thank you very much.
On House Bill 2675, and open a work session on House Bill 2388. Oliver?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you is House Bill 2388A. The bill received a public hearing last Thursday. It essentially grants TCBS the authority to deny, revoke, or suspend a pharmacy benefit manager's registration, and it specifies the conditions under which the registration can be denied, revoked, or suspended, declares emergency. It's effective on passage. There are no amendments. The bill has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. Statements are on OLIS. The bill passed out of the House unanimously, and the committee has the paperwork.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2388A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2388A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, just to say that this bill is delving into an area that a couple of us on this committee intend to do a whole lot more research on in the next few months.
Okay.
That would be correct.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byron?
Yes.
Aye.
Senator
Steiner
Hayward?
Aye.
Vice President?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Senator Cruz will carry the bill, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2388. And colleagues, our analyst has told us that our bills are pretty thin for next week. Would you like to combine them onto one day and then maybe have one day off if we aren't getting bills? Is that going to be a problem? Okay, so I'll let you figure that out and then let us know, because I'd rather have a fuller hour and 45 minutes than...
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We agree.
All right. Thank you, and we're adjourned.
No, okay. We could do our meeting tomorrow if committee...
No, okay.
We could do our meeting tomorrow if committee...